300 years ago, Sir Thomas More invented the word utopia, where everything was going to be hunky-dory. But now we know it's going to be a green-powered Earth, and that'll be solartopia.
Was there an Adam? Was there an Eve? Or did we evolve from what we conceived? Either way, we got what we needed when the sun shone down on the Garden of Eden.
And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found.
Yes, we did. We started to burn many things we found, including some hemp and marijuana plants. We are back here for another hour of the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. I'm Harvey Wasserman. Thanks so much for joining us. We are going to talk today about legal marijuana and hemp and medical marijuana as well. And especially we're going to talk about the abominable policies of the Obama administration, which has been notoriously absent from the obvious reasons why marijuana needs to finally be legal. We have a really great guest with us today, and we'll be joined later on by another one, Bob Fetrakis. But with us first is Mark Kleiman, author of Busted, America's War on Marijuana. Mark, are you with us?
Wrong book.
Oh, which is the book? Sorry about that. Let's hear it.
It's Marijuana Legalization, What Everyone Needs to Know, Oxford University.
Oh, there you go. All right. But it never came to me. And also
Drugs and Drug Policy.
So, Mark, where are you speaking to us from?
I'm actually speaking to you for the Office of the Organization of American States in Washington, D.C., where we're having a meeting on hemispheric drug strategy.
Hemispheric what?
Drug strategy. The heads of government meeting, as the Summit of the Americas asked the Organization of American States for a report on alternative drug policies. So much of us are.
All right. So what is your role in this? You're an author, and are you an attorney?
No, I teach public policy analysis at UCLA and the University of Virginia.
Okay. Let's update our listeners, many of whom I'm sure know the situation. I've just read a pretty infuriating piece at Alternet about the Obama drug policy and so far the lack of change. There's a lot of buzz, a lot of static out there right now about the fact that people seem to think the Obama administration is taking a new look, we hope, at marijuana policy in light of the fact that Colorado and Washington have now legalized it. It is officially legal in Washington State now and will become so, I guess, in Colorado. Is it December 31st, Mark?
I don't know exactly what the timing is in Colorado. Legal, of course, under state law.
Yes,
right? Still correct. Illegal under a perfectly valid federal law.
So, you use the term perfectly and valid, neither of which I would use to describe.
No, I'm just saying, as a matter of legal and constitutional fact, the government of the United States has the power to pass laws that are binding on all the states, whatever the states choose to do. Alcohol prohibition was repealed in New York State in 1923. You couldn't be arrested for selling alcohol by New York State authorities because it wasn't illegal under their law. You could still be busted by the Treasury.
Well, now let's take this up. We have a full hour here, and we will be joined by Bob Fetrakis. We're with Mark Kleiman. Mark, the feds during Prohibition, the first Prohibition, the alcohol Prohibition, did the feds during Prohibition bust people in New York for alcohol any less frequently than they did in other states because it was legal in New York? Did people in New York get any kind of break?
Nope.
Because alcohol was legal under state law?
No, of course, under alcohol, what we call prohibition when we applied it to alcohol is what we would call decriminalization if it were applied to marijuana. It wasn't illegal to drink. It wasn't illegal to have alcohol.
Uh-huh.
It was illegal to produce it or sell it.
Uh-huh. So you could go to a church on Sunday and synagogue on Saturday and have your sacramental wine Friday night.
There was a specific sacramental objection, though. Actually, wine's not served as part of Jewish synagogue ritual, only at home.
Well, also the Eucharist, I assume, at the churches.
The churches, yes, though small amounts. Not. It's wine is used in Jewish ritual, but only in home ceremonies.
No, you can get it at synagogues. You haven't been to synagogue lately, right? You can get wine at a synagogue.
No,
right?
There's sometimes a little party after the service.
Uh-huh.
But there's no Jewish equivalent of the sacramental wine that's used actually in the Christian church service.
Okay, so there was an exception in the law during the alcohol
sacramental use. So
religious use. But there is no
and for medical
exception
use.
In the marijuana laws for the ganja being used by the Rastafarians, for example.
Correct.
Although there is a little known variance for peyote, which is not part of this law, but peyote is actually allowed under federal law
mm-hmm.
if you are a member of the Native American Church
mm-hmm.
and part Native American. I'm sure all of you part Native
American. No, actually, that blood quantum is written into some state laws, but not into the federal law.
Oh, it's not. Okay.
But there's also the courts have now carved out exceptions for a couple of ayahuasca-using churches.
Well, that's interesting.
I raise this
because I teach a diversity course at a university here in Central Ohio, and my boss is the leading expert on the peyote religion in terms of academia anyway. And because he's not Native American, I don't think it's legal for him to take peyote, even if he goes to the Native American church.
It may not be under Ohio law. It certainly is under federal law.
Very good. We're glad to hear that. Okay.
There were various exceptions, but look, just the federal government's not arresting people for using marijuana now. They're arresting people for growing it and selling it, just as they arrested people for producing and selling alcohol.
I've read some pretty horrific accounts of medical marijuana patients who have been busted by the feds.
If you look carefully, they were not busted because they were using it. They were busted because they were a medical marijuana patient growing it for 1,000 of their best friends.
All right. Well, why did the feds go in and bust Oaksterdam in Amsterdam, in Oakland, California?
It was running a large-scale marijuana selling operation, which is against the federal law.
Mm-hmm. Okay. So what you're saying is the administration, to your mind, has not been busting individual users, but it has been busting growers
sellers.
And sellers.
Right. And in each case, as far as I can tell, in California at least, places that are not even in accord with state law. Since the state law provides for collectives, not for for-profit businesses. California state law says if you're a patient, you can grow your own, you can possess it, or you can join a collective to procure it for you. It does not say you can set up a store to sell marijuana to all comers. And yet everybody's shocked when the federal government says, okay, these guys aren't even obeying the state law. The amount of phony outrage that people can make money and get radio audience by ginning up is really pretty shocking. And
well, what do you mean?
I mean that a lot of what's said on both sides of the debate about marijuana isn't true. It's just designed to get the rah-rah troops rah-rahing. And a little bit of calm, generous-minded thought about what people are trying to do and why they're doing it would allow us to have a more sensible conversation. The Obama administration is not some evil conspiracy. They've got a very difficult hand to play because there's a validly passed congressional law. If they weren't enforcing the Violence Against Women Act, we'd say they weren't doing their job, even in a state that didn't have its own Violence Against Women Act. So it's a complicated, hard problem. If I got to write the laws, there would not be a federal law against using pot. But, in fact, there is. So now let's talk about what we can do to deal with the fact that voters in Colorado and Washington decided to go their own way, and the federal government now has to deal with a conflict between what those two states are trying to do and what the federal law says.
Well, let's hear your opinion on this. Give us the title of your book again.
It's called Marijuana Legalization. And the first author is Jonathan Calkins, C-A-U-L-K-I-N-S.
Okay.
Oxford University Press. And it's a question and answer format book where we try to say what we know. It's addressed to the mass population, not to our fellow professors. And it's a complicated problem. In fact, marijuana is not nearly as dangerous as alcohol. And in fact, it's not benign. A lot of people get messed up on alcohol, on cannabis.
Okay, I'm going to disagree with you on that. I mean,
well, you can disagree if you like.
Especially.
Huh?
What's that?
You can disagree if you like, but when people go in, adults, not under court's compulsion, go into drug treatment centers and say, look, I can't control my cannabis use, I say they got a problem. But it's not very different from an alcohol problem.
Well,
denying
yes,
that reality
that's true.
Does not...
On the other hand, there's a tremendous amount of literature about the beneficial medical uses of marijuana.
There's a lot of literature about the beneficial medical uses of heroin. I mean, the opioids are wonderful pain relievers.
Mm-hmm.
Doesn't mean people don't get messed up on them. The fact that something can be used well does not imply that it can't be used badly. I mean, you shouldn't have to say such obvious things.
Well, but
by the same token, the fact that some people get addicted to cannabis doesn't mean that it doesn't have beneficial medical uses. This whole debate consists of two sides, each denying self-evident truths and making it harder to actually discuss the choice we have to face.
Well, we're talking with Mark. Now, you spell your name K-L-E-I-N-M-A-N, is that correct?
No, N. K-L-E-I-M-A-N.
Okay, okay. So, basically... if you had your way, you would of course legalize pot on a national basis. Is that correct?
I would. Well, no. Let's be careful. If I had my way, which I'm not gonna, but if I had my way, any adult who wanted pot could grow his own, or her own, or if she didn't have that particular talent or the energy or the house room for it, she could join a cooperative, use her own cooperative, small. Not with a lot of marketing, nobody making $1 million a year. So basically hire somebody to grow marijuana for, just the way you can, you know, buy a share in an organic farm and get your organically grown kale delivered once a month. That would be my ideal.
Have you smoked any kale lately?
Huh?
Have you smoked kale lately?
I haven't smoked any kale recently. The point is to make the stuff available to grown-ups who want to use it. Without having all the smart marketing guys on Madison Avenue inventing brand new versions of the Bud versus Bud Light ad for the Super Bowl. Setting up a situation where people are getting rich.
Quite amusing.
Huh?
You know, do you have numbers on the number of, on the percentage of pot users that are actually addicted? I mean, how addicting is pot? Obviously, you've done quite a bit of research on it, so how addicting is pot?
So the classic answer is that about 9% of people who have smoked at least 5 joints, right? So leaving out the people who tried it and just didn't like it.
Mm-hmm.
People who want
or didn't inhale, like Bill Clinton.
Or didn't inhale. People who go on to smoke their 5th joint have about a 9% chance of winding up heavy daily users for a period of months or years. The average spell
and you consider that addicted?
Huh?
You consider that addicted?
I'm not going to use the term addicted because that at the moment does not have a clinically accepted meaning. I'm saying that 9% of people who smoke more than trivially will spend an average of 44 months stoned all the time. It's not good. A friend of mine is a libertarian lawyer who's in favor of pot legalization. Said to me, you know, I'm just like all those politicians. I only smoked pot once, and I really, really regret it. Once was from the spring of 1963 to the fall of 1967.
Mm-hmm.
We've all known that guy, right? It's not harmless. It's particularly not harmless if that 3 years is the last 3 years of high school, and the median age at first use of cannabis is now 17. That's not good.
Well, how would that change if it was illegal?
Oh, it'd go down, just as it, I mean, it'd go down toward the alcohol age, which is even younger. I mean, the notion that we could legalize and somehow reduce abuse is silly. Of course we'd increase abuse. We're increasing access, including for kids, because anything adults can get, kids can get. And
well, yes,
the
that's
data
true
we
now.
Have,
I mean, the data
we have.
Is, a, but, I'm glad we're having this debate, by the way. It raises a lot of questions. So I have five kids, and I have seen kids who grew up smoking pot, and I don't think it's healthy. On the other hand, I don't think it's worth throwing in jail, people in jail to prevent.
Oh, well, you and I are agreed on that. I think making a law against possession for use is a mistake, including for kids. Now, I'm not sure it's worth it.
Wait. Let's not jump away from that. I do support a 21-year. I support the same threshold. You know, I support a smoking age as I support a drinking age. I am very much in favor of a 21-year-old limit on buying alcohol.
Does that mean you think it's okay to arrest kids?
Well, I don't know what to do with it, but I think a statement should be made as a parent and by the society that kids under 21 should not be drinking because it's too early in their developmental phase, and addiction is clearly more possible among kids who start under 21. I mean, there's a biological imperative there, and I think it holds true for pot.
So that 9% number I quoted
story.
You. That 9% number I quoted to you is back when people didn't start using pot till they were in college. So
correct.
If you looked at today's pot users, the rate of developing an abuse pattern would be higher than that, getting on close to the alcohol number. But notice what you just said would illegalize about 40% of the pot consumption in the U.S. So an awful lot of pot is smoked by people under 21. So 40% of the currently illicit market is still illicit under your formula.
Yeah, it's a
you gonna arrest
question.
The dealers?
How do you, let's talk about this then. Let's have this discussion. How do you discourage kids under the age of 21 from drinking and smoking?
Well, my first answer to that would be not by announcing this is for adults, since the thing an adolescent most wants to be is an adult.
What fools.
Well, yes, there is that. Youth is wasted on the young.
Absolutely.
All right. I mean. So I think what we're getting to here is this is not a trivial, made-up problem. This is an actual problem.
It is a problem, but of course we haven't come on a solution yet. And if you've got one, I'd like to hear it. I mean, I do support. Let's put it this way. I support the goal of a 21-year-old drinking age, and I would support the goal of a 21-year-old smoking age. But I don't know. How to do that?
Right.
How do we discourage kids from under 21 from drinking and smoking?
All right. So there's one thing that people under 21 have in common, on average, not all of them, compared to people over 21. They have less money.
Yeah.
So the best way to discourage drinking among kids is to raise the alcohol tax.
Tax. Now,
the alcohol tax is now inexcusably low.
Mm-hmm.
So
What is it, just for the record here?
About a dime a drink.
So, you mean a bottle of beer? Or
bottle of beer costs a buck in the grocery store, has a dime tax on it.
Okay.
And that tax ought to be about a dollar.
So what are we going to set the tax on marijuana?
Well, we already know that making it illegal, we can only keep it at about $10 a gram for the fancy stuff and half that for the low potency stuff. So we can't reasonably expect to get the licit price higher than the illicit price. But I think we also shouldn't let it be any lower, because I think pot's plenty cheap enough as it is. Here's the way I do the arithmetic. You buy a $10 gram of Sensimilla. Unless you've got a serious pot habit, that ought to make between 2 and 3 joints, each of which will get you stoned for, 3 hours? Is that a reasonable number?
You know, I hate to tell you this, but I have not smoked pot for 30 years.
Oh, right.
Because I get it, and let's put it this way, it made me. It reminded me of George W. Bush. It made me It made me paranoid and put me to sleep. So I stopped smoking pot.
Yeah, if we put George W. Bush to sleep, that would have been better. But however,
yeah.
So the answer
is... One second, though. Can we, Mark, can we defer here? We're talking to Mark Kleinman here about marijuana and policy. It's a very adult conversation. I'm very happy for it, actually, getting into some detail. I have a caller, Ron in Queens. Ron, what do you got for us?
Well, the first thing I'd like
Ron,
to say
before
is...
you come on here, I want to know, are you stoned or are you straight?
Right now, I'm straight.
Okay, good.
Okay,
you can
first
be stoned
thing I'd
if
like
you want to, but you know, we do have a screening mechanism. It's like Rush Limbaugh, you know, he stones anybody. He screens anybody from the left.
Yeah, okay.
Go ahead, Matt. Go ahead, Ron.
Well, the first thing is I'd like to get some documentation on anybody who's ever said that they were had a marijuana habit. Yeah, that's something I've never heard of.
Oh, I have. I've had a lot of friends who were, smoked morning, noon at night, and knew they were hooked.
Yeah. Wait a minute. Hold on. Let me quantify what I'm saying, okay? If you smoke morning, night, all right, that doesn't mean that you're habitual, okay? That's a preference. Now, if you want to regulate people's preference to what time or when they can smoke, that's another thing, all right? But to say that if somebody smokes morning, noon, and night, that they're addicted, all right, is a fallacy. It's a straight-out fallacy, all right? Now, to say that somebody who smokes and says, I can't go to work today because I smoked, you know, or as if I can't go to work today because I drunk or I use drugs and I'm all drugged out, all right, it's totally different.
What happens if you say I smoke and I can't go to work today because they're going to drug test me and they'll fire me if they find out?
That has nothing to do with your addiction. That has to do with government regulation. So we have to, you know, you got to keep things in their perspective. You know, you're not saying that you're not going to work because, you know, I can't handle it. You're not going to work because you're trying to avoid something. So that's totally different.
Right. Mark, what do you got to say about addiction versus habitual use?
Okay, so it turns out that if you look at the national drug surveys, most of the people who use cocaine every day meet the criteria for dependence.
I'd agree.
If you look at the people who use pot every day, it's about half. You know, there are people who, you know...
And what criteria are you using to say that they are addicted?
They... say that they've tried to cut back and failed. They say that marijuana is interfering with their lives. They say that they're spending a lot of their time getting stoned or getting stuff to get stoned. They say that marijuana is causing conflict with other people in their lives. Right? It's interfering with their lives. That's the test.
And you said that's a national survey, right?
It's the National Survey on Drug Use and Health.
And okay. what are the percentage of people who use? That's 9%.
Well, no, that's number's from a different study. That's who over a lifetime will develop a pattern of this. So this is people. I'm doing this from memory. About 30 million people smoked in the last year. About 16 million people smoked in the last month. About 4 million people meet criteria for abuse or dependence.
Okay, let me just say this before I get off. That you're talking about a national study, okay? And then we have to think about who produced the study. Because if you go back to when it was outlawed, okay, it was outlawed for reasons. And the reasons that it was outlawed is because it was interfering with commerce. And when I say that, I mean certain people's commerce, like Hearst and DuPont.
This is the Jack Herrera paranoia.
Excuse me?
This is the Jack Herrera paranoia.
This is no paranoia, all right? Because if you go to Popular Mechanics, you can see that it was a billion-dollar crop in 33. How much is that now? So this is no paranoia. And here's another thing. Whenever somebody wants to put a point across, their point across, what they say is somebody else is paranoid or somebody else is a conspiracy theory, you know, where the real conspiracy is hidden, they portray something else as being the conspiracy. So, you know, that's all I want to say about that, and thank you for letting me speak.
Well, thank you, Ron. Thanks for your call from Queens, New York. It was Ron talking about pot. We're talking with Mark Kleinman here, a leading expert and author on marijuana. and marijuana legalization. So, Mark, you say that the – well, first of all, you mentioned a number of 30 million people smoking pot. I've heard generally that about 10% of the country does smoke pot, at least somewhat regularly in this country. That would be – you know, we have about 310 million people in the U.S. that we know about, more or less. And so 30 million is about right. Is that what your numbers
well,
look like?
Well, yeah, it's usually done based on the 15 and older population. We don't count kids.
Oh,
but
okay.
Yeah,
and so 30 million people in this country are pot users.
Yeah, that is, if you ask them today, they will report they used in the last year.
Okay. And I want to point something out here, and this is, you know, people ask me if I don't smoke pot why I'm so, I am really, really, almost, I'm a fanatic about it because I think it's a civil liberties issue. If you have 30 million people in the country doing something mm-hmm. that's more or less, you know, we'll argue about this, but I don't think it's particularly harmful in general. And in fact, since I did have a cancer scare, there's a lot of evidence that there are many, many medical uses for marijuana. This is not a sham in my world. So 30 million people doing something in a country to have it illegal and have people busted for it, that is a civil liberties issue, especially you have a 500,000 arrests a year. That's insane. That's way
more than that, unfortunately.
What's that?
More than that, unfortunately, it's like
yes, and it's utterly ridiculous, and so and it affects the entire society. It hurts our budget. It ruins people's lives, and it makes people paranoid without smoking pot, because
right.
you can get busted. And
right.
we have plenty of evidence, of course, that people do get busted, and the cops are more than willing, in some circumstances, to plant the ubiquitous marijuana on them. So I am a very strong advocate for legal pot, even though I'm not a smoker. I do have a medical marijuana card. I made a point of getting one when I was in California recently, and I went out and got some brownies, and that was fun.
What did the card cost you?
It did give me a headache, but I can't tell you if it's the headache was from the pot or from the sugar in the brownies.
Well, what did the card cost you?
A card cost me $50, actually.
Okay, I think that's about the standard price.
Yeah. I mean, I don't know how much of that went to the state.
What did you have to pretend to have?
Oh, I didn't have to pretend to have anything, man. I got bad knee, you know. I got all sorts of ailments. Arthritis qualifies you, and rightfully so, apparently. I haven't done enough of it to have it help my arthritis, of course, I guess it makes you forget your arthritis. But nonetheless, it is a huge deal. The legalization of marijuana in this country is a huge deal. If these 500,000 arrests would stop, and the money that we waste on the imprisonment and the trials,
be careful on the imprisonment.
Okay, we can go there. So let's talk about that in a minute. So the 30 million people smoking pot in this country, we're agreed on that, more or less, right?
Right.
Okay, and then you're saying 9% of these are addicted.
No. Again, different number.
Okay, let's hear that.
The 9% number is the following question. If you take a bunch of people who ever smoked marijuana, and you ask, did you ever have a period of heavy daily use that counted as dependency? The answer to that question is 9%. So that's a lifetime number, not a snapshot number.
So what's the current, what would you say the
current number is something like 4 million people who meet criteria for abuse or dependence. Again, addicted is not a word that's in scientific use at the moment.
Okay. So it's what it's how would you characterize these people?
They have substance abuse disorder relating to marijuana.
Oh,
they're abusing or dependent.
Well, if they have substance disorder relating to marijuana, if the marijuana was not available, they'd probably be abusing something else.
Not evidence of that. In fact, it looks as if people who have really bad drug problems frequently are polydrug abusers.
Polydrug
use more than one drug.
Yeah, okay.
Particularly on the younger side. You know.
Well, what do you mean by the younger side? How old?
People under 40 tend to be.
Come on, how about under 20? That's what we're concerned about.
Well, that's even worse. So they tend to have lots of different drugs, or at least cannabis and alcohol is the most typical combination.
But it's not true. The cannabis is still going to be getting drunk.
That's what we don't know. And it appears not to be true. Most people have a favorite drug that they may use. They may, you know, have other drugs they supplement with, but there's one drug they really like because they like what it does to them.
Mm-hmm.
I could never be an alcoholic because I don't like the stuff. Right? That's a very good protective factor.
Yeah.
So there are lots of people who maybe heavy pot smokers, who couldn't be heavy drinkers because they don't like to drink. Right? That's, you know. So the notion that, you know, there's this characteristic of people that, you know, you're going to be addicted to something and then it's just a question of what drug, doesn't match the facts as we have them. If pot's available, some people who wouldn't be abusing something else will be abusing pot.
Man, I find that, okay, you know, let me just clarify the way, I don't smoke pot, every once in a while I will, but, you know, certainly not on an addictive basis. The only thing I'm addicted to actually is maple syrup, but, and it's a serious addiction, but, I, you know, I do like the smell of it, and I hate the smell of cigarettes. I cannot stand to be around cigarettes. Do you have any numbers on, by the way, the people who are addicted to cigarettes?
Cigarettes are very, very unusual among drugs of abuse. About 20% of American adults. So let's see, that's
60 million people.
No, adults, maybe 40 million people.
Are addicted to cigarettes, nicotine.
Oh, well, are smokers.
Well, most smokers I know are addicted.
Bingo.
It's really
so that's
hard
what
to
distinguishes tobacco. Or that's right. That's what distinguishes cigarettes from almost anything else, that most people use it or hooked on it.
Oh, yeah. It's, I have read. And
notice that most pipe and cigar smokers are casual smokers.
Cigarettes. I have read that nicotine is more addicting than heroin. Have you seen that?
Well, again, you can't talk about nicotine because there are lots of people who use nicotine in cigars who aren't addicted to it. It's specifically the packaging of the cigarette that maximizes every possible risk factor for addiction.
Huh. Very interesting.
So that's a very unusual drug where 90% of people who smoke at all smoke between half a pack and a pack and a half a day.
Well, that's a lot. I mean, that's enough to give you lung cancer, man.
Right. But that's
completely serious stuff.
But it's a very narrow distribution. Right? It's, you know, so 3-to-1 basically covers 90% of the users, right? Somebody who smokes a joint once a month, right? And that's a pretty typical marijuana use pattern among people who report they use in the last year.
Well, of course, a joint is no longer a joint. I mean, you know,
it's whatever it is.
You can get a couple of puffs now and do what a whole joint used to do way back when.
But people who smoke once a month, compare that to somebody who has 5 joints a day every day of the month. So the 5-joint-a-day smoker is doing 150 times as much pot as the casual smoker, whereas the heavy cigarette user at a pack and a half a day is only doing 3 times as much as the guy at half a pack a day. So the distribution of habit sizes is just completely different for cigarettes than for
anything. We're having a very learned conversation here with Mark Climie, author of a new book on marijuana, a co-author, rather, of a new book on marijuana. We're going to take a short break here. Run some of the Soartopia music, and we'll come back with this very interesting and in-depth conversation about the change. I want to get to a really serious discussion here of what the Obama administration is or is not going to do. That's the question on everybody's mind. Peace on Salon and Internet circling around, Salon and Alternet circling around the Internet now. I think, of course, that if Obama pursues the federal law here, he's going to make a huge mistake. Mark Climie, we'll talk about that. Hopefully we'll be joined by Bob Patrickis, and we'll be right back after these messages. We are back here at the Soartopia Green Power Warmer Show, talking about marijuana, legal and otherwise, with Mark Climie, a co-author of a new book and on pot legalization. And Mark, you teach at UCLA, is that correct?
That's correct.
Now, what do you teach?
Teach public policy.
Public policy. Are you a political scientist?
No, I actually have a PhD in public policy. Wrote my dissertation on marijuana policy, as it turns out.
You did?
I did.
And did you turn that into a book? Is that part
yes.
of this book?
No, that's a very old book called Marijuana, Costs of Abuse, Costs of Control.
And what was your conclusion in that PhD thesis turned into a book?
That increasing federal marijuana enforcement was a waste of time, and that legalization was a complicated question.
Ah,
complicated. Okay, well, let's talk about complicated in a couple minutes.
Harvey, you know what? I want to go back to the caller we had.
Okay.
Because if you think about that conversation, right? So I said, some people have a marijuana problem. And he said, what's your evidence for that? And I said, well, here's this national survey. Here's the data that comes out of the national survey. And then he started ranting about how William Randolph Hearst wanted marijuana banned because it was a competition with the paper industry. Right, so here's a question, here's a fact that answers the question. I don't like the fact. So let me assert without any evidence that it was made up for some bad purpose. Sort of, you know, Mitt Romney's approach to polling.
Yeah.
It's Imhoff's approach to global warming. If that were true, I'd have to do something I don't want to do, so I'm going to say it's not true.
Uh-huh.
not a healthy way to live.
All right. And we also want to talk about hemp in a minute, though. And I definitely want to ask you about the prospects for legalization in California. We have a caller, though. Alan, are you with us?
Hi.
Hi, Alan. How are you? Calling in about pot.
Okay.
Are you, Alan?
Yes, yes.
All right, so we have to screen you here. Are you stoned?
Not at all.
Oh, okay. There you go.
Harvey's
anybody
disappointed.
Not at all. He's definitely not stoned. So, Alan, what do you got for us?
I think the statement where you're addicted is basically horse crap. Anyone that smokes cigarettes for more than a couple of weeks, they become addicted. There's a reason. I've done research. Between 110 and 700 chemicals are added to it is to make it more addictive. Cigarettes are more addictive than regular cocaine. Not as addictive as crack cocaine. Cigarettes are the big evil. To compare cannabis to that is absurd. Cannabis is used as a, people use different tools. It's a tool to help relax or escape or get away from pains and bad things in life, and can be used very much as a medicine, has been used as a medicine for thousands of years, since, you know, biblical times, which country, you know, pick your nation, everyone's been using it ever since, you know, in our little new country, it's only 250, 300 years old. Our forefathers wrote on the Constitution on it. I mean, they stated on the nothing better than that after a fine day to go back to the White House and sit on smoke a fine bowl on the back porch.
Yeah, that's an interesting assertion. I've heard that before. I have written a book, by the way. I do want to put out there, I have written a book under the pseudonym Thomas Paine. It's called Passions of the Pot-Smoking Patriots, and it portrays George Washington as a gay pot smoker. We know for absolute certainty that George Washington and Thomas Jefferson both raised prodigious quantities of hemp, about which they were greatly appreciative. They loved hemp as a crock. But I don't know how much evidence
you
have
to say hemp.
Smoked it. Right.
What happens if you smoke hemp, the stuff that you grow for food and fuel and fiber?
You get a headache.
Correct.
Alan,
there's no reason to think that anybody in Colonial Virginia, where they grew hemp, thought of it as a psychoactive plant because the stuff they were growing wasn't psychoactive. Completely different conversation.
Not completely. They are I find it hard to
believe. Were you there to distinguish? How do you say for certain when you weren't there? I mean, yes, you can have both at the same time. You can have 100 different varieties of hemp and everything in between.
Referring to using cannabis for intoxication.
Were you blatantly stated before, with a lot of gall, by the way, that, you know, anyone that uses it is paranoid and, you know, you're using you addictus and that? That's horse crap. And I used it for years, and then guess what? Every once a year, I took a month off. Why? Just to prove to myself that I could do it. And then guess what? I took a whole decade off after I graduated from the university with a 3.84. So are you saying that I would have graduated with a 4.0 if I didn't smoke while I was in college? Come on, I'm 384. I got three college degrees. I mean, you may have a PhD, la-di-da, in some degree that not a whole lot can appreciate. I'm sorry to stamp on your degree, but I think my degrees are a lot more useful to society and beneficial to society than yours is. So for you to be ranting about how bad it is, and, you know, the people that say, hey, I do use it because our society sucks, and I use it as a tool to escape it, or I'm in pain because I use it as a tool to escape from it, you know, what about people that sit around on the couch all day and watch TV because they don't want to deal with it? Or the thousands of alcoholics that are ruining and destroying their lives and others' lives. I don't see cannabis people just walking out in the street and jumping on the freeway, tying up traffic, or causing a problem. And, you know, they sit at home and smoke cannabis. And you said some people smoke five joints a day. Well, if someone smokes that much, well, you know, if they can afford it, great. If they're sitting inside their living room, great. Let them be. They're not damaging our lives. People that smoke do bother me. When I'm out walking my dog and people drive by and flick their cigarette butt at me, how would they like if I went to their house and flicked some firewood and that is on fire in their driveway? You know, it's disruptive. It's disgusting. Smoking is a filthy habit. And alcoholics driving around, I mean, come on, give me a break. It's not an hour. Bars open at night. How are these people getting home? Yeah, they're supposed to take the taxi. They're supposed to. How many drunk drivers every night get home drunk? How many people kill people, including themselves, every night? Get real.
Yeah, we back when you were smoking a lot of pot?
Whoever said I smoked a lot. Please don't put words in my mouth. You're losing your credibility by this second, buddy.
Mark Kleiner, let's hear what were you about to say about that.
Well, I'm just curious about whether when our caller was smoking, he was a better listener and had better manners. Because straight, he's really not very good at either of those activities.
Well, let's
better
let's
manners.
Well,
you want me to bend over while you lie?
Let's keep it to the issue. Pot smoking
better manners.
In my mind,
you want to note that none of the things he attributed to me were things I actually said.
He's angry at somebody else.
He's not angry at anything I said.
Let's keep it to the issue here.
Sure.
Pot smoking is certainly, by all accounts, less addictive. I mean, there's a gray area here on addiction, but our caller has made a point which I agree with, which is that cigarettes are way, way, way more addicting than pot.
Cigarettes. Are of course more addictive than pot. They're more addictive than anything.
Yes,
they pose a different set of issues.
And yet, there is not only the illegal; there are multi-billion-dollar industry in this country.
Yeah, right, which is bad policy.
A thousand people a day dying from lung cancer.
That we should apply to marijuana the same policies that do so badly with beer and cigarettes doesn't appeal to me.
Well,
I don't want the same entrepreneurs who are now doing their level best to addict as many kids to alcohol and tobacco as they can be trying the same trick with marijuana. I think that's bad.
So how do you stop that? Where's the middle ground on the policy?
One middle ground would be no commercial legalization. Right? Grow your own, form a co-op, no businesses. I don't think we're going to get there. I think we're going to wind up with something like the alcohol policy. Much tougher regulations on marketing, probably the Supreme Court will allow us to have. Right, so the Supreme Court has this idea of commercial free speech that makes regulating something once you've legalized it pretty hard. But I sure take a crack at it and want to make it expensive enough so that you don't get a massive increase because the stuff is now dirt cheap.
A massive increase among young people. I don't care if adults smoke it. Why would we care if adults smoke pot?
Again, it depends on whether they're part of the group that will self-report that pot is messing up their lives. I mean, I'm prepared to take people at their word. If they say, hey, my pot smoking is a problem for me, just like my overweight is a problem for me, my drinking is a problem for me, my anger management is a problem for me, I assume that's a real problem, not a made-up problem.
Well, yeah, but look, I mean, so what you're saying is, Alan, are you still with us? Oh, Alan, our caller's gone. Mark Kleiner, what you're saying is,
how about the thousands of millions of obese people that can't say no to pizza? They have a problem, and they won't recognize it, and it's going to exponential rates. I mean, if you want to start opening up problems in society that are going crazy, I mean, cannabis is number 55? I mean, there's a lot more important issues than cannabis. Cannabis is the least of our worries. Who's this great grower? They want it outlawed so people can't grow in their own backyard. I couldn't possibly make alcohol in my own backyard. I wouldn't know where to start. Where would you make, how do you make whiskey?
I think between the three major so-called recreational substances, alcohol, tobacco, and marijuana.
How's tobacco recreational?
Marijuana is the only one that you can really grow with significant intoxicant properties on your own.
No.
You can't really grow cigarettes. You can't really. I mean, you can make alcohol, but it's hard to do.
Not very.
But pot is not. Pot is easy to grow.
Alcohol is trivial. I mean, you buy fruit juice and sit in the refrigerator. It'll ferment.
Well, see, Bayer Aspirin and the great drug companies don't want to go up against cannabis because they'll lose. Anybody can rather just, make up some stew, make up some brownies, cookies, whatever, and you feel much better, and your ache and pain, you'll be recovering from whatever a lot faster, and with no side effects. That's the key thing, is there's no side effects. You take Tylenol, oops, there goes your liver. Oops, there goes your kidney. Side effects on this. Read the side effects on this, that. It's, oh, the side effects on Xanax. By the way, you could die from this heart attack. These are serious side effects.
All right, well, let's get down. Alan, thank you for that and all of that. It's good for the discussion. We're down to our last 13 minutes here, and I want to, since Mark is...
standing by here.
Mark is a an expert on public policy, and also teaches in California. I got two serious issues to deal with here.
So let me hey, Harvey.
Mark on. Yes.
Hey, Snoop Dogg smokes 81 blunts a day.
81 blunts. Well, there you go. So here's the questions. Snoop Dogg, somebody I just talked to credited Snoop Dogg for converting many, many crack and heroin users over to pot, which I think is actually, if it's true, is speaks in his favor. But let's talk, one of the reasons I had Mark on, he's a heavyweight public policy guy. What is the
That's a reference to my waistline. I resemble that remark.
Oh, sorry.
Can I get a quick rebuttal here?
You're a credible, let's put it that way, uniquely credible public policy. What is the Obama administration looking at here, and how do we move the Obama administration to cease and desist this policy of busting people, especially in the medical marijuana states, and especially, of course, now the airways are filled with speculation on what's going to be done about Colorado and Washington. So in terms of public policy, where do we stand? And where does the administration
nobody's
say?
Got a clue what's going to happen with Colorado and Washington. The administration's keeping mum. In California, if we could get the medical marijuana industry to conform itself to the state law, that'd go a long way. But I don't expect that to happen anytime
soon. Well, let's hear the detail on that. What are you saying about the medical marijuana industry, and how are they abusing the state law?
Well, you start out with the doc who comes up to you on Venice Beach and says, give me $40 and I'll give you a recommendation before he asks you what your name is. Right? I mean...
Well, he should be asking you what your ailment is, right?
Yes. He should be, like, acting as a doctor instead of acting like a seller of drug licenses.
Well, I was just on Venice Beach about a month ago, and you know, my knees were killing me.
Yeah, I know.
And so I went and bought some marijuana brownies, and by God, they helped.
How many docs came up to you?
Oh, nobody did. I had to go find the clinic, actually.
I see.
Can I get a quick statement in here?
All right, Alan, real quick, and then we got to really focus on public policy here.
Okay, I just want to make a rebuff to what was said when I was off the air about being paranoid or something, conspiracy. I never mentioned Hearst, okay? You mentioned Hearst. Actually, I was thinking about DuPont and the medical industry. But since you mentioned Hearst, that would be another one. But my point is this. The point is that in 1933, it was a billion-dollar crop. Now, with inflation and the, you know, with the money that we have now, that's got to be about $60 billion.
It would be bigger. Let me tell you very quickly. Last week, I had Andrea Herman on and another Tom Murphy from the hemp industry. And the hemp industry, and that's where you get to, on the paper and the DuPont issues.
Right, that's what I'm talking about.
In Canada alone, the hemp industry is $450 million. And see, there are many thousands of people working in the hemp industry in Canada. And I'm going to speculate. And, Alan, we're going to have to jump really seriously here on the Obama issue, because that's what I want to deal with here in a very short period of time.
Let me say a word about hemp. Yes, it's legal to grow industrial hemp in Canada. And they have an industry of $450 million. That's a long way from $60 billion. And you can import it into the U.S., right? I mean, so if there were...
Yeah, but I'm going to speculate here, and you can disagree with me if you want. I think the hemp in the long run is going to be a bigger cash crop than marijuana, because there's so many uses for hemp. And our caller, Alan, is making the point that, you know, he thinks, as do many people, I mean, you read The Emperor with Has No Clothes and all that stuff, that the reason marijuana was... one of the reasons marijuana was made illegal is because companies didn't want to, especially paper and so on, didn't want to compete with hemp.
Here's the problem. Here's the problem with that theory. Since it's legal to grow industrial hemp in Canada and in China, and since they both do, in fact, grow it and export it to the U.S.
and Romania,
if that massive market were available,
it would already develop. There's nothing in the way of that massive hemp market except the fact that for every use of hemp, there's something better.
Well, there's a whole other world of discussion which we can do next week.
I know, but
you're welcome to join us again next week, Mark. I'm going to have Don Wirtschafter on, one of the great pioneers of the medical marijuana and hemp.
Take a look at chapter 15 of our book. It's not work I did, but we did the work, and you know it's not there. Sorry.
Well,
hemp
was
a very important industrial product in 1933.
We'll see about that. I'll respectfully disagree with you. And since we're running out of time, though, I do want to talk about the balance in California. I'm going to assume, and you can tell me as a Californian if I'm wrong, that there will be a legalization issue on the ballot in California in 2014.
I hope not.
Well, why would you be against that?
Because what we learned between 2010 and 2012 is that if you want to pass cannabis legalization, you do it in a presidential year, not an off year. The presidential year electorate is much younger than the off year electorate.
Oh yeah, but
the mistake they made in California was to put it up the wrong year.
Yeah, except well, first of all, they didn't lose by much, and second of all, now with two states legalizing, I'll bet you're going to. And the big test, obviously, is going to be if Colorado and Washington make money on it. I mean, if they make money on legal pot, I'm sure that all the other states are going to, at least in the north, and in the west, are going to run to legalize it. Don't you think, with the horrible budget problems in California, that Jerry Brown is going to, if he sees that money is being made in Colorado and Washington, he's going to want it to happen in California as well?
I think the revenue numbers are going to be very disappointing, even if the feds get out of the way. But the real issue. The reason it didn't get on the ballot this year in California is a $1 billion medical marijuana industry that would be destroyed.
Oh, now that's an interesting. That's something I didn't think of. So, are you saying now that the medical marijuana industry is a poison pill against full legalization?
That wasn't the plan. But if you look at the vote in 2010, the Emerald Triangle,
yeah, sure,
Humboldt, Trinity, Mendocino,
yeah,
all voted no on Prop 19.
Really?
Yep.
You mean for full legalization?
Yeah.
Oh, no, for medical legalization.
No, Prop 19 was full legalization.
Ah. So when you're, okay, let's explain this all to our listeners here.
The growers.
No, I'm sure.
The growers in the area north of San Francisco where the stuff is grown know perfectly well that legal crops in California are not grown in cool and rainy climates. They're grown in the Central Valley. And if marijuana were a legal crop, it would be grown in the Central Valley, and they'd be out of business.
Well, is there enough water in the Central Valley?
There's plenty.
Yeah.
And the medical marijuana providers, you wouldn't need a card. You wouldn't need to go to a dispensary. You just go to your pot store.
So we have 18 states plus the District of Columbia now where medical marijuana is legal. And are you saying, based on your public policy investigations, that the medical marijuana industry will oppose in all 18 states
nope.
the full legalization of marijuana?
I'm just stating the facts as the facts are there in California. Now, in fact, the very small campaign against the Washington legalization had support from some of the medical marijuana industry, but they didn't do very much about it.
Ah.
That industry is going to be torn. You know, the ideology says, of course, we want to legalize it. The bottom line says, we got a monopoly. Why should we give it up? But it's going to it adds a layer of complexity. That's all I'm going to say.
Yeah, well, that's interesting. I hadn't thought of that. I don't know. I mean, for a pothead, even in the marijuana business, to come out against full legalization, that's going to be a conflicted thing. We're talking with Mark Kleinman.
A wise man once said, it's very hard to get somebody to see something if his income depends on not seeing it.
Yes. Do you want to know? You want to tell us who said that?
I do, but I can't remember.
Karl Marx. Not Groucho, either.
No.
It was Karl who said that.
No.
Anyway, we're talking with Mark Kleinman, an expert. And what is the name of your book, Mark? Give us a plug for your book.
It's called Marijuana Legalization. It's from Oxford University Press. And the first author, if you want to look it up, is John Calkins, Caulkins.
And who has published your book?
Oxford University Press.
And how long have you taught at UCLA? You're a professor of public policy at UCLA?
For the last 17 years.
Okay, so let's have a prediction here. We got 3 minutes left. What do you think the Obama administration is going to do here about these two states that have legalized and the 18 that continue to have medical?
I will quote an even greater philosopher than Karl Marx, Yogi Berra. Predictions are dangerous.
When it comes to the fork in the road, take it.
Predictions are dangerous, especially about the future.
We could endlessly quote Yogi Berra about this.
I don't have a clue. I think in most of the states where they've got the medical marijuana thing reasonably under control, so it doesn't just look like covert legalization, the administration's mostly leaving it alone. In the states where it's been pretty flagrant, like California, they're coming after it. And I don't know what they're going to do in Colorado or Washington. I don't think they know either. I think there's a very strong case for letting Washington, Colorado be the laboratories to find out what happens. But whether that's a persuasive case to the Attorney General, I don't know.
Well, and in that case, then, you would say that the feds would keep hands off.
Yes, that would be an argument for keeping hands off. But no idea
what
that argument could prevail.
Well, here we have the great Pete Seeger singing us out here. You've been a great guest, Mark Kleiman. Welcome to have you back.
Many
next
thanks.
Week when I talk with Don Wirtschafter, one of the pioneers in the marijuana issue, which I clearly think is an extremely important one for our Green Power and Wellness Society. We've been talking with Mark Kleiman, public policy expert on legalization of marijuana. We will do it again next week. With Don Wirtschafter, you're welcome to join us. I say, Mark, thank you so much, Matt and the crew at PRN, for another wonderful hour of the Solartopia Green Power and Wellness Show. We'll see you next week.
Thanks.
So we had to work to pay the cost. And so we went digging into the ground and started to burn many things we found. But don't you know?